I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. As I tell Adam Guan in the conversation that follows, it was the song Fine from his musical Ordinary Days that I likely first came across his work. It must have been one of the many performances that one can see on YouTube that introduced me to his music and lyrics. It's an oft-covered song because it's funny and it tells a story, like a lot of Mr. Guan's songs. Last spring, All the World's a Stage had a run off-Broadway. It had been commissioned by Keane Company. Today, the full album of the original cast recording is released by Joy Machine Records and features songs from the show that the New York Times described as, quote, disarmingly powerful and as charming, specific, and appealing. I'll ask Adam about the show that he also wrote the book for that earned Drama Desk Award nominations for outstanding lyrics and outstanding orchestrations. The show is set in small-town America in the 1990s, where a gay high school teacher has to maneuver carefully depending on wherever he finds himself at the moment. His carefully compartmentalized life starts to unravel, and the desire to make connections and yet be true to oneself in polarized times makes the show timely and universal. Here's part of one of the numbers in the show, Saturday Night in a Small Auditorium, that not only gives us a sense of Mr. Guan's work, but the scene that is set as the show begins.
It's a Saturday night in a small auditorium, in a small, unremarkable town.
There's a poster out front for the latest production.
And posters from last year they never took down. There are seats with red cushions, long tattered and worn. A curtain hung slightly askew.
And on Saturday night in this small auditorium, there is you.
You, Richard Alleman, skittish.
Handsome.
Ricky to your friends. Friends who are not in this small, unremarkable town.
You're new here.
Just moved.
From one blip on the map to another.
Still settling in.
Still finding your footing.
And right now, finding your seat.
On a Saturday night in
Adam
a small
Guan is
auditorium.
An acclaimed musical theater writer whose works include Ordinary Days, The Boy Detective Fails, Cloudlands, Bernice Bobs Her Hair, Cake Off, String, Scotland, PA, and Witnesses. Visit adamguan.com for more. We spoke earlier this week with Adam joining me from New York City. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Adam Guan. Mr. Guan, good morning.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So the show is called All the World's a Stage. I went into it cold as I was listening to the album, and it's just such a marvelous love letter to the theater and its power.
Thanks.
Like the one number from the show must go on. I mean, it's such an anthem. I like that song because it a lot happens in it as well, in terms of we get to learn about the characters. And it even reminded me of Sondheim's Opening Doors, where...
Oh, well, that is a very high compliment. Thank you.
Because we're learning about each of the characters. Because, as I said, I went into the show cold and not knowing really what happens. I had sort of treetops idea about you know, who the main character is and what he's found himself in. Learning about sort of their, where they are, I guess this comes at a point in the show. I guess that's the, I'm trying to remember now, is it the middle of the show where they're sort of trying to figure out figure out not just one another, but what path they're going to take, say?
Yeah, that song happens, I would say, just about at the midpoint of the show when things kind of take a turn.
Yeah, it's as I said, it's so full of not just, you know, it's not just a wonderful song to hear in terms of the music and the lyrics, but it tells a lot, too, I guess. Is that something that you like doing as a writer, sort of moving the story along in a song, say?
It is. I think it's what really draws me to writing for the theater, is you're always thinking about story and in an ideal world, leading an audience to a brand new place by the time a song has ended. And so I am always thinking about those journeys and what kind of journeys these songs can take people on.
So I understand this was the show was a commission from Keene Company, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And so not just the music and lyrics, but you wrote the book as well, is that right?
I did. I decided to tackle the whole thing for this one because it felt like a very personal story that I wanted to share and felt like, why not take the plunge and try to write the whole thing on my own?
See, one of the questions I was going to ask is what comes first, the music or the lyrics? But I guess the story comes first, doesn't it?
That is true, yes. I spent a great deal of time thinking about the story for this and the characters. And, in fact, spent a good portion of that time in Canada, ironically enough.
Oh.
I got a writing retreat about 3 hours north of Toronto, part of a writer's group called the Hermitage Artist Retreat. And so I spent probably 10 days in a cabin in the woods just thinking about the characters and the plot and figuring out, you know, if A happens and leads to B, then what's C and D and E and F and G? And left that writing retreat with an outline of what the story could be. And from there built out the songs and obviously fleshed out more of the characters and more of the plot as I went.
So I guess as you're working at the retreat, are you hearing lyrics? Are you hearing music at the same time as you're doing all this work, say?
I am. I can't escape the whispers of music and lyrics that come into my head, even when I'm just working on a story outline. So I think that impulse was definitely there from the beginning, and getting ideas about what kinds of situations and what kind of emotional experiences the characters could be singing about.
So the show was set in the 1990s. Was there a particular story that inspired, or was something in the news that you heard that inspired, say, the show?
Yeah, there were a couple of things. I mean, one reason that I was drawn to the year 1996, which is when the show takes place, mm-hmm. is that I happen to be the same age as the high school student character in the show in 1996. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the show, especially around the high school student character and her relationship with one of her teachers who kind of helps her connect in a new way to theater, came from my own experience as a high school student in 1996. And another thing that made me think about that time period was when Keene Company came to me with this commission and basically said, what's on your mind? What do you want to write about? We were in the middle of the pandemic, so I'd been thinking a lot about theater and my high school teachers and because they were the ones that introduced me to what theater wound up meaning to me in life. But also at the same time in the news here in the States, there were a lot of conversations and even laws being passed around the idea of gay and lesbian teachers and what parts of their identities they could speak about in the classroom, what kind of materials they were allowed to teach that featured gay characters and gay historical figures. And that got me thinking, oh my goodness, I bet some of my teachers in high school were gay and I just didn't know it because no one talked about it back then. And of course, the sort of culture at that time was this don't ask, don't tell idea that was part of the military back then. And it struck me that this conversation about teachers was sort of cycling back to this don't ask, don't tell idea. And I got really curious thinking, you know, if I was a teenager back then and knew that one of my teachers was gay, would it have made things easier or would it have made things more complicated? Could it possibly be both of those things? And it was really that question that led me to the story of the show. So it was very much a combination of me thinking back to my own high school years in the 90s and then this kind of more current conversation that was bubbling up that seemed to be swirling in the same kind of waters.
Yeah, that's a frightening thing about history, isn't it? That things that you think are 30 years old do cycle back. I mean, that's what also makes the show so relevant to today, doesn't it?
Yeah, and something that was really eye-opening when the show happened was a lot of young people who came to see the show who weren't alive in the 90s found a kind of comfort in the fact that this history was repeating in a way that, that we have actually found ourselves in this situation before and found a way out of it. And so that was a kind of surprising and very moving element of the show, watching people, young people sort of take in this historical moment and feel a really deep personal connection to it in the present day.
Yeah, that's another thing I was going to ask you is in terms of people telling you how much your work has meant to them or how it speaks to them. I mean, you just said, you know, you've heard that over the course of the run for this show, All the World's a Stage. That feeling never gets old, does it?
It's true. And with this show in particular, I found it to be very emotional. I think because I didn't quite realize until the show was up in front of an audience just how much of myself and my own high school experience I had put into the story. You know, it's easy to get swept away by these fictional characters you're inventing in your head. And then suddenly when you're in a room of strangers watching the story unfold, you go, oh my gosh, that's me up there. What have I done? But something that was really remarkable was the way that the show seemed to open people up to come up to me, strangers come up to me after the show and just spill their life stories out to me, whether it was relationships they had with their own teachers and mentors or struggles that they had had with their own friends and family members who were part of a religious community and had to sort of learn to embrace outsiders and specifically queer people. And I was so moved because I feel like for me to be able to have that conversation with the world, I had to make up fictional people and a fictional story in order to express what I was thinking and feeling about my own experiences. And somehow the act of doing that allowed people to speak to me, a total stranger, about their lives and to be vulnerable with me. And I just thought that was such a beautiful testament to what art and what theater can do, especially for someone like me who feels like I need that. I need that middle, that intermediary of writing a show in order to open myself up in that way. So it was very moving to connect with people.
A song in the show, Mirror, it's such a wonderful song, such a rich song, because it highlights how sometimes we don't realize how we help and inspire people. And then that role of being a role model, that's important, and we should never overlook that if we can be that person for somebody else.
It's true, and I love what you said about sometimes we don't even realize we're being that person for someone, and I think that's sort of the what I was just speaking at about sort of gets at, is that sometimes just by living our lives and doing our thing and expressing ourselves in the way we know how, sometimes that acts as a beacon to people, even when we didn't intend it. And that's really important to remember.
Yeah, another song is I Don't Ask, which is such a powerful song. And it also makes one realize that we really don't want to be in that position where someone is hurting in our lives and we didn't do anything. Because I think that's what the character's singing about, isn't she?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I was that character and that storyline with that character, she plays the secretary at this high school where the main character teaches. Uh-huh. The main character is gay, but isn't out at the school. And his best friend at the school is this secretary who comes from a religious background, and when she discovers that the teacher is gay, has a real struggle sort of reconciling the love that she has for her friend, and these beliefs that she's wrestling with, that she's lived with her whole life. And And that character in that situation is very much based on my partner and his family. He comes from a small town in Pennsylvania, just like in the show, and from a religious family who went on a real journey to accept our relationship and to reconcile the love that they felt for him and these religious beliefs. And so that song for her really came from a place of trying to understand what it must felt like to go on that journey and wrestle with seeing someone you love in pain and wanting to reach out and just not knowing how. Because it was really important to me that character did not feel like a villain or an antagonist in any way. That she was really going through a struggle that we can all relate to in some way. And that song was sort of the linchpin of that story for her.
So what is it like? You've described Adam sort of seeing yourself as the show's put on stage in front of you. That must be a fun sort of out-of-body experience to collaborate with other people and see your work sort of interpreted and given a sort of new life of its own.
It is. It's one of the great joys of working in theater is that sense of collaboration, especially on this piece, because, like you said, I wrote the whole thing myself. A lot of musicals and a lot of the other projects I've worked on, I've had writer collaborators, so there's another person I'm working with to write the show. But this one, I was really on my own until we got into the rehearsal room with the actors and the director and the musicians. And there's something incredibly collaborative about building a new musical because you're figuring things out as you rehearse. The actors have questions, the director has questions. You're tailoring the songs to these actors and these singers that you have. So it's a real dynamic process. And the four actors that we had in this show were just remarkable collaborators and were so generous in terms of bringing their own perspectives and their own life experience into the room to make the story just as rich and authentic as possible.
And this album now must bring back great memories in terms of not just the creative process, but the run off Broadway last year, right?
It's true. We got to reunite the entire cast and the entire music team for the album. So it is truly a snapshot of the production that happened. And I feel really lucky because I think a lot of people don't realize that not every new musical, especially new musicals that run off Broadway, are lucky enough to get a cast recording. And so I feel really, really lucky that the universe seem to conspire to allow us to preserve this album and share it with people who might not have been able to see the show.
Do you remember the first cast album that you got early on, Sam?
I do. I remember I was gifted. It wasn't even necessarily a cast album, but it was a compilation of the greatest hits of Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I just remember that the first track on the album was an instrumental track that was kind of a suite, a medley of songs from Cats, the musical. And I was so taken by it as a kid. You know, I would like dance around the room and play it over and over and over again. And I think that was one of the gateway albums that got me really excited about musical theater.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, I was going to ask you where you grew up, and I don't even know where you grew up. In the course of the research, I forgot to look that up. But cast recordings, they have such a wider reach than beyond, say, New York City, and now thanks to streaming services, we can get them pretty fast. And
oh my gosh, yeah,
it's remarkable how. Because you and I are about the same age. I mean, you know, I remember CDs growing up, seeing them, you know, in shops and the sort. You know, this new show that's a big hit on Broadway has a cast album. Well, you know, let's see it, or let's buy this thing and hear it and see what's going on in New York. and then to think, you know, future productions or future work could be inspired by, say, somebody, you know, downloading this thing, you know, after Friday, and wanting to do the show in their own small little town, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a really cool feeling to feel like your album is entering into this great tradition of musicals that get preserved and hopefully passed down through those albums. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, mm-hmm. and I used to, you might remember this as well, when I got really into musical theater and cast albums and wanted to like listen to every single album that was out there, I would go to the library, the public library, and check out all of these incredibly obscure musical theater albums and record them from the CDs onto cassette tape that I could keep them and have them with me. And I just had like stacks and stacks of these homemade dubbed cassette tapes of cast albums from the public library. So they were definitely a big part of my growing up.
The thing I hate now at 43 is going to a garage sale or thrift store and seeing a bunch of CDs and realizing how much I paid for them back, you know, 30 years ago.
Yes, yes. All those, do you remember the binders, those like sort of binders, it just had binders and binders of CDs that are now completely obsolete.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed this album a great deal, and you know, there's so many wonderful songs in it. I first came across your work, you know, seeing people perform the song "Fine" on YouTube.
Oh, sure.
when a song like that has a life outside of the show, where it's performed in concerts or a cabaret, what is that like for the composer? I mean, when you know that people are performing your work, say, outside the context of a show, I mean, does it? I was going to ask something crass, like, what does that mean for the pocketbook, for example? Do you get a royalty or something like that from your publisher? But beyond that, people finding your work and wanting to perform it—that must be nice.
Yeah, no, it's definitely another sort of out-of-body experience, I would say. That particular song, Fine, had a very viral TikTok moment, mm-hmm. which is how a lot of people found it. And monetarily, I would say, it's like surprisingly not very remunerative. that incredibly viral TikTok moment got me maybe like a nice dinner out. So it's less about that, and more about just the kind of shock of seeing people all around the world, you know, singing and lip syncing to this song. It's funny, it got to the point where people would come to see productions of the musical that it's from. It's from a musical called Ordinary Days. Mm-hmm. And people would, that song would come up in the show and people would say, oh my gosh, this is the song from TikTok. Like, they hadn't realized that it was part of this musical, but it was still out there in the world. And so that is definitely very much an out of body experience.
I like that song because, again, it's a song where you learn a great deal about the characters and what drives them and where they are in their lives. At the same time, the story is moved along throughout the song in terms of this relationship between the couple that performed the song. A similar song, I guess, in that vein is Other Lives from All the World's a Stage, where... the character makes you laugh, you know, a great deal in the beginning of the song, and then at the same time, you know, breaks your heart because of her narrating the relationship between her and her mother. That's such a moving song that I can't help but think that Other Lives will have a life of its own beyond, say, this show.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. A song like Other Lives often is my favorite kind of song to write, which is a character telling a story. Like, it's quite literally the character telling the story of her relationship with her mom. Yeah. I don't know. There's something very satisfying to me about writing those kinds of songs that feel almost self-contained in that way. It's its own little jewel of a story. And like you said, figuring out the specifics of how that particular character tells the story. Like, that character starts the story by kind of playing it cool and making jokes and being a little sarcastic. And then as the story goes on, you realize, oh, that's actually masking a really deep pain and longing that she feels, that kind of makes itself clear by the end.
Yeah. Is there a part of the creative process that you dislike the most?
That I dislike?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I would say starting always feels the hardest for me, whether that's starting a new project or even just starting a particular song.
Uh-huh.
Cliche as it sounds, that idea of a blank page is very daunting.
Yeah.
and once I have an idea and get rolling, then I have so much fun trying to figure it out. It feels like putting together a puzzle in a certain kind of way. But that very first moment, that light bulb moment, if you will, can be very painful, very frustrating.
So then what is it like once you're rolling? I mean, that must be, as somebody who's not creative, it must be just unbelievable how you get inspired, you get struck by inspiration that you can't, in some moments, can't stop it, right?
Yeah, there's a real kind of energy to it. It's kind of invigorating, which is what I love about it. It's funny, even if I'm just sitting at my desk or sitting at my piano writing, after I'm done with a writing session, I am sweating like I went to the gym. Like, it really, there's something incredibly, like, literally physically invigorating about it to me. Once you get over that initial hump, I really, really enjoy the process.
In terms of the process of writing a song itself, how often does it happen where you're say working alone, sitting alone, writing the music and the lyrics, and it works right away, or does it always have to go through somebody else's ear or eye, and then you add something to it and then it's finished, say?
What's funny is I feel like I never fully understand what a song is doing until I hear someone sing it. A lot of times I can have a pretty strong idea about what I want the song to accomplish, or my vision for what the song is doing and sounds like. But every time, the first time I hear someone sing it, there are always things that I hear that I want to change, or an idea that I had about the song that becomes clearer and will allow me to revise it. So I think that's another reason I'm drawn to writing for the theater, is that moment of handing the song off to a performer really feels like an important step in the writing process for me. I really feel like I don't fully understand the song until I have that distance and can see someone perform it.
So by the time people are listening to this, this album will have come out, this original cast recording. Are you working on another show now, or are you in development, say, of another project, say?
I am, yeah. I'm fortunate to be working on another commission piece, this one from Roundabout Theatre Company, which is a fantastic company in New York that's produced two of my shows already, and I'm happy they've commissioned the third. And that this one I am working with a collaborator on, a wonderful playwright named Michael Mitnick. And we're about two-thirds of the way through our first draft and are trying to finish pushing that boulder up the hill in the next couple months so we can do a reading and, like I said, hear people sing the songs and see what we've got.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, people should pick up this album. And have you got advice for people who say hear this album and want to, say, put it on in their own community and in their own high school theater, even? I mean, I guess they'll be able to do that soon, right, in terms of getting the rights or wanting to mount the show themselves, say?
Yes, absolutely. It hasn't officially been announced yet, but I think maybe by the time this comes out, it will be, where the rights will be available. If not, you can always check my website, which is adamguan.com, and I will keep all the information posted up there. But yes, I think it'll be available for schools and theaters to do very soon.
Yeah, I can't help but think that this show is something that, that people will want to see, especially, as I said a moment ago, that, that it's incredibly irrelevant and timely, which is at the same time disappointing, isn't it? But
sure, yeah.
but it is something that, that people should see.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I appreciate your time today. Thanks for this and all the best.
Yeah, thank you so much, Joe. This was a pleasure.
The website for more is at adamguan.com. All the World's a Stage, the original cast recording, is released by Joy Machine Records today. And it's composer, lyricist, and writer Adam Guan. Join me on the line from New York City and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.